Chema. So for Shurbindo's birthday, there are so many things that we can meditate upon, but keeping in mind the present conditions of the world, I thought I'll read something from the mother and Shurbindo about that. Because this yoga is a yoga of the world, it is interconnected with the world. It is not for just an individual moksha or individual transformation. There is no such thing as an individual transformation. It, by its nature, a collective process. So how would Mother and Sri Aurobindo see what is happening? And it's surprising that they have foreseen all this. They have spoken about it. And we see that every few decades, it's like there is a cyclic recurrence of certain resistances which rise up and then they are annihilated. So it is just like in individual yoga that you go through phases when everything is very beautiful and then suddenly certain resistances from within spring up, certain difficulties. So we go through those difficulties and it looks like now it's all wonderful. But then the difficulty again comes up. It is the same difficulty, but now in a slightly milder way, in a slightly different form, because this is the process. There are things which are buried inside the world and they are not going to give in easily. So as practitioners or as disciples of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, we are not oblivious to what is happening in the world, but we look at it very differently. So the first thing first is that Mother and Sri Aurobindo say the conditions in which men live is because of the state of consciousness in which they are. So it is not about karma, it is not about this, that, 100 things we may say, but it's because of the state of consciousness. So if the state of consciousness remains what it is, if the state of consciousness does not change, so it is ideal to change the outer conditions. So we may have any amount of outer manipulations, changes, but unless we change within, the collective consciousness of the world changes, all solutions will be temporary, all solutions will be transient, and they will always be subject to dash, dash, dash. So how to change the consciousness? That has been the key of Sri Aurobindo's yoga. And there is something called as an individual change of consciousness, where through yoga, we come more and more in contact with the higher consciousness, the highest, the supramental consciousness embodied in Sri Aurobindo and the mother. So the logic is very simple. To change, we must come in contact with that consciousness. In some way, we should know it and come in contact. And then when the two meet together, this is what the old Vedic yoga is also similar thing. So when the two meet together, there is an interchange and an interfusion. So when man meets the divine in whatever way, something or in whatever aspect of the divine, if you make it very general rule, or in a more general way, even when we meet anyone, X meets Y. So there is an interchange that begins, and with this interchange, there is an interfusion, and both undergo a certain change based on each other's consciousness. Now when man meets the divine, what happens? We have a very limited consciousness, full of errors, full of proclivity to all kinds of things. So it goes into the divine. But divine being the origin of all this. So what happens? It's not like he just absorbs it like Shiva. These qualities and tendencies undergo a change. Because even the worst thing has its origin somewhere in the divine, of which it is a distortion. So it undergoes a change. Mother speaks of it, that supermind is that where good and evil both discover their origin and fuse, and they undergo a change, which is so strange. So what we call evil today, the tendency to, you know, for example, greed, if you look behind it, is the tendency to conserve when it takes a selfish and then becomes, you know, very harmful for everyone. So basically the same thing when we offer it to the divine, give it to the divine, that's what she says, don't put it under the carpet. Offer it to the light. So what she does it, she takes it, if you do it sincerely, and then that tendency starts undergoing a change. In return, the divine also gives. And what the divine will give, we can only imagine. Peace, purity, light, delight. So this is very simple. That's what yoga is about. Coming in contact with the divine and through more and more giving. This is the process Shurbindu says that, you know, because the more you give, the more you become receptive. It's not about just sitting in meditation in a corner. The more we give, the more we become receptive because there is a space created and we receive and there is an individual yoga which continues. But what about the world? So for the world, Shurbindu brought down the supramental truth consciousness. So it means now he changed the operating system of the world. Now willy-nilly, wanting or not wanting, the world consciousness is coming in contact with the supramental consciousness. So the same thing which is happening at an individual level starts happening at the collective level, at the world level. So what is the consequence of it? Men try to do things in a certain way. And because the supramental consciousness is now here and pressing upon the world, it takes it up. And it gives something else in return. So you calculate and think, imagine things will happen in this way. But the results are very different from what you have perceived or imagined. But that's the action of the supramental consciousness. So basically the yoga is about change of consciousness individually, collectively and in the world. So of course world consciousness we can leave for the moment because that's a very large area. Except for those who have grown into the, developed into the cosmic consciousness. For most of us, there is something in between the individual and the world. And that is the collective consciousness. Collective consciousness of a group of humanity. Say in a center, in the ashram, Auroville. And if this collectivity can engage together in this change of consciousness, then it can facilitate the change in the world. And as the consciousness changes, so we will start seeing the outer results. So this is the basic principle, very simple. What is the supramental consciousness, people ask, or what is the meaning of consciousness? Well, consciousness is the knowledge and power of the divine, to put it in very simple words. So in the divine origin, it is omniscient and omnipotent. Absolute knowledge, absolute power. And that's the supramental. Supramental is omniscience and omnipotence of the divine. But as it descends into earth, it slowly, slowly, just like when light enters an obscure medium, light is the same. But because of the medium, it gets deflected, it gets distorted, it gets diminished. So as it enters into the fields of ignorance, this is what happens. At the origin, there has to be only one reality and that is the supramental, it's the creator. But that omnipotence and omniscience of the divine gets diminished, distorted, deflected. And hence we have the world what it is today. Why it has to pass through ignorance? Simple logic is that we are, or creation cannot straight away meet that tremendous intensity. It will collapse. We can't even bear a little more than usual joy. We are geared up only for thodi khushi, thoda gham. This is our limit. That we can only bear a little joy, a little sorrow and that's it. So slowly mankind is being prepared or creation is being prepared in which mankind has to play a crucial role of going from little joy, little sorrow to a vast cosmic, you know, those who develop in their consciousness can feel the vast cosmic suffering like the Buddha. But also the solution they come up is with a cosmic solution. So slowly as mankind develops, so that also tendency begins to change. And ultimately, each human being has to become a vessel and vehicle of the direct action of the Creator. That means the supramental consciousness. So practical omniscience, practical omnipotence. That means that intuition begins to become more and more frequent in mankind. That means that the power of the divine begins to become operative all around, which includes peace, purity, light and everything. So as these individuals grow, they become hubs, receivers and transmitters, and all of us actually becomes to some extent, something we become hubs. Like, you know, you have the main station where you have the electrical energy being generated and you have houses. But there is something which comes between houses and the main station. They are the transformers. And even in the house, you have those, you know, switches. So, you see, this is exactly the process. Otherwise, switches will go away. If the current is too much and the wire is not ready, it will blow up. The same process applies. So, first, slowly, the divine makes us accustomed. And that's one reason why people should come to the ashram and spend a little time and go. Because it makes us accustomed to to that kind of force, that energy. And also, centers which are there. Idea is through this contact, these become local hubs to receive and transmit. So slowly we get accustomed, then the process starts within us. Then after some time, as we grow, the divine increases the intensity. So what seemed like, okay, this is so beautiful, slowly, slowly now, the same process starts. All that is hidden inside, all that was carefully covered behind the image of a very nice human being, well-behaved, well-mannered, all that is stripped bare, because transformation is a exacting process. Shobindo says there are no halfway measures. There is nothing which has to be excluded. So first the transformation starts in those parts which are, by transformation is meant the change of the human into the divine. First the consciousness and then the instruments. So by change of consciousness is meant that, what does consciousness do? It's knowledge and power. So within us there is a limited knowledge and limited power. Because of limited knowledge we misunderstand, we don't understand all around whatever is happening. You know the story of that Tilottama and Kalidas, before he became Kalidas, that Tilottama showed one finger and Kalidas showed two. And then she showed five fingers. Kalidas showed this. He was not Kalidas, whatever his name was. So she said, there is one reality. So he, Pandits wanted to fool her actually. Because she was very proud of her knowledge. She said, I'll marry only somebody who knows more than me. So Kalidas understood she wants to take away one eye of mine. So he showed two, that you take one, I am going to take both. But she understood it as that, well, he's right. Reality is one, but it manifests as two. See, we all understand the world according to our consciousness. He showed five fingers. She showed that panch bhut make this nature. And Kalidas felt, she means I'm going to give you a slap. And he showed the fist. I'll give you a mukha. And she understood that he's saying panch bhut have to come together. So basically we understand the world based on our state of consciousness. Unless you change it, there is no question of any understanding. That's why people say that only after they have lived together for years, whether they understand each other or not, but at least they accept each other. Because it cannot come. They are two different people altogether. But it is only if consciousness changes, evolves, or there is an identification, then it's possible. That's why we cannot understand the divine unless our consciousness becomes divine. So anyways, so first thing is knowledge. Because we have limited knowledge, we don't have the true knowledge of what is going on inside. Therefore, we don't understand rightly. And there's confusion, misunderstanding, chaos, quarrel, everything else. And then because we don't understand rightly and we have a limited power, we do things which equally foolishly. So the more limited the power, the more violent somebody is. You know, because you are weak, you are afraid. You see, when we look at Ramayana, Ravan and Meghna, the way they shout and like braggart, and what does Rama do? He says, okay, you have given a nice speech, shall we fight? Because he is confident. The person who is very strong is very calm. Because he knows. He knows his strength. So absolute power, or as we ascend in the scale of power, we become automatically calm, strong. We don't get jittery over every small little thing. So you see, the response to world is also different. So that's the inner change of consciousness. Mother uses the word reversal of consciousness. You start looking at things very differently. For example, if there is a painful event, if there is something which triggers suffering, so untransformed consciousness will immediately, the last person, you know, first you blame the world, somebody is there to be blamed. If nobody, then you blame God. And there are people who will say your karma, so it becomes like a cycle. But in a consciousness which is reversed, the values are very different. It says, oh my God, I couldn't get rid of this. Divine has got me rid of this. And even though a part is suffering, the other part is rejoicing. It is happy that, you know, there was some kind of a inveterate attachment, resistance. Divine has removed it. So the person, instead of suffering, the whole thing changes into an inner joy. So this is what the reversal of consciousness is, where the values change in the world. Now, as this happens in the world, things begin to change. Now we can, as I said, we can change only within ourselves. So there is the change, fundamental change of consciousness within. Then there is the change of instrument. That is the transformation's ultimate. Change of instruments means transformation of instruments. That, well, consciousness changes inside, but the brain, the nerves, the blood vessels, they all respond habitually. Because if any little onrush of energy, the heart goes, beats fast. It doesn't matter. It may be a happy event, fearful event, sad event, because that's the only thing it knows. It basically, when the heart beats faster, what is it saying? Something unusual is happening. That's all. It doesn't say whether somebody loved one has come or there is fear. That's the mind's interpretation. But heart begins to race. It cannot bear. So forget about bearing that intensity of divine love. One may well actually literally have a heart attack. And similarly, the brain, the nervous system cannot bear it. It may break down. Hence, transformation is a slow process. Whoever wants to do it fast, they should. And that's why Mother says, don't pull. It's a process. You can't suddenly raise the temperature of an oven and expect that the dough you have put will come out into a very good bread. For all you know, it may be a burnt bread, not edible. So, dhimi aaj par pakna. So, normally in that process, it's the brain which gets first. The transformation, the brain cells, as Mother says, reading Sri Aurobindo is one of the simplest ways to start this process. So when the brain cells, because brain is the receiving of the transforming power, it's the first, is the seat of consciousness, just as heart is the seat of divine. So these two are the main important parts to change. So when the brain begins to receive and assimilate, and the simplest way is to read Sri Aurobindo. Read, doesn't matter whether one understands or not, because the brain begins to become ready. So when it begins to receive and assimilate and does not break down, because otherwise see spiritual truths, and we know that people go berserk. They start saying, you know, there is nobody who kills and nobody, and then you start killing, doing anything. Mother has said, do everything. Everything is done by the mother. I have surrendered to the mother, therefore I'll do everything. Everything is one. Why this happens? Because the brain is unable to receive that knowledge rightly. And it does a great havoc to the world. So therefore the brain must receive well. So that's where it starts. Then the second part is the nervous system. And so aches and pains, because the nerves can't bear that onrush of energy, and the heart. So these three change. Then the lower vital part, the instrument, the organs, all this is a long process. So that's how the transformation changes individually. As it happens in individuals, it automatically spreads in those who are around. That's the whole idea of the ashram, creating such places where people can come together, and it facilitates. So if somebody is a little ahead, it helps those who are a little behind to catch up. But equally, those who are refusing to move, they also exercise a drag. So this is one part of the process. So this is the basic, and then in the world, similar process will take place. It's a big subject on what are the changes taking place in the world which are compelling humanity to change. And one thing which I may say is the equation between man and woman in the world is changing, and you just can't help it. By you, I mean those who want to hold on to the old way of life, it's gone. Children, they are changing the parents, the other way around. They're compelling parents to become sincere, to become honest, to become, you know, develop integrity, because they want this in the child, but they don't embody these qualities. So children are compelling us to look beyond the mark sheet, to look beyond the success, failure, reward, punishment, to look beyond. So divine has his own ways. So the same thing is applying to the world. And in the world, the mother says, the last thing to change, that's what we are witnessing today. Politics and finances. So this is the last seat of resistance. It comes up. For some time it changes. And again it comes up. Because that's the field of maximum resistance. So here is something that the mother writes, it's based on what Aurobindo has written, the descent, Aurobindo's writing, the descent of the supermind will bring to one who receives it. So we should not imagine that whole humanity will wake up and, you know, start glowing in the supramental light. Nor is it a shortcut process. Several times we speak about it. Yoga is not like, buying a pastry in a shop or going to McDonald's and picking up French fries for a cost. So all who imagine that, well, I can pay up in some dollars, or maybe Indian rupees now, through the UPI, and I can, in 5 days, 7 day courses, I can suddenly come out of it all with some kind of a supramental light. It is nonsense, actually. Aurobindo and the mother would not waste time. 35 volumes of Aurobindo. If there was something like a small little process, though mother at one point does say, and she is pestered literally by the disciple, give us a method, some method we can do. She says, hasn't Aurobindo told you open to the mother? You're not supposed to do it open to me. No, still a method. Then she says, speaks about the mantra, speaks about the mother's name. Aurobindo has said very clearly, there is no method in this yoga except to take the mother's name and mine. This is the method. And then to open. But this is not a magic method. It's magic, of course, but not like I start taking name and I'll undergo a transformation. You have to do a lot of things along with that, which are part of the process. So transformation is not an easy to do step 1, 2, 3 process. And to imagine that is actually to do a disservice to Aurobindo, because you are giving a wrong impression that you can do a crash course and get transformed 1 week, pay some money and there will be some, you know, guided imagery. All over the world, guided imagery is there. No harm, it makes you feel good. But that is very different from the actual transformation. So Aurobindo speaks of those who open and receive it, one who receives it and is fulfilled in the truth consciousness, all the possibilities of the divine life. After all, it's a creation of divine life, building of divine life. And this morning also I was quoting this. People often ask either about ashram or will, what's happening. Everybody wants, people don't know what's happening in their own life, but they want to know what is happening in Auroville. Sometimes you need to ask a counter question. What's happening in your life, by the way? Do you understand? And then I have only this one word to say. Rome was not built in a day is a famous phrase. And Auroville and the ashram are not built in, 100 days or even 100 years are very less. Because you are building a new life. You are building a divine life. You are building a new, not just a civilization, but a divine humanity. What is 100 years? Rome took several hundred years, several hundred. And it has become a phrase. Read the history, 300 years. Julius Caesar downfall, then Augustus Caesar, then another 300-400 years. Then you had the Roman civilization. 600-700 Supermind ko kuch 100 years to dena chahiye. So it's a process. Impatient people who want quick result, want to have some visions and experiences, this is not the yoga. This yoga is for authentic change, not simply to make us feel good. So he says that it will take up not only the whole characteristic experience, which we recognize already as constituting the spiritual life, but also all which we now exclude from that category. Normally, spiritual life is when you sit in meditation, when you do some puja, when you're standing before. Of course, that is religious life. Mother makes a distinction, Aurobindo also, between religious life, the spiritual life and the supramental life. But that's a different subject. But generally, we consider certain activities are spiritual. For example, when we sit and meditate, it's spiritual, definitely spiritual. Even if we have closed our eyes and are meditating upon the samosa party after, that's our foolishness, because we just see the eyes closed, sitting like, oh my God, what a spiritual person, 2 hours he is sitting. You know the story of the man who used to sit for 2-3 hours, and then people around were very impressed. He is the one. And one day, everybody got up, but he continued to sit. Satsang is over, everything is over. So they are all waiting. And then suddenly he gets, what is the time? Why didn't you wake me up? We thought you are in meditation. So he says, well, I get a good sleep, I come here. So it's not what we do outside, but what is happening inside that is important in this yoga. And that is something to which only the person, if one is sincere, and the divine who is a privy. Nobody else will know. So many things are going on inside. It's only in the deep sincerity, not what we are speaking or doing, but inside. And that is the core aspiration. That's why he speaks of aspiration. And that will bring the change. And that can continue throughout the day. It is not about some special hour. So the mother asked the disciple, so what are you asking? What is excluded? What do we exclude? So the disciple asks, I don't see what we are excluding. Mother says, ah, that's sensible. Here we profess we are excluding nothing. Please understand the ashram in that light. Every type of humanity is here. Every human tendency is here. Where else it will go for transformation? It's not a place where just everybody is sitting quietly and doing chanting om. It's a place where you grapple with real life issues and with ego, desires, everything. Because this is the place where they can be transformed. Every tendency. Once further, mother says, when she was asked, what is it that the supramental life will throw away? She says, well, why should it throw away anything? Then she says, okay, hypocrisy. That makes it difficult. Because on the gate, somebody will tell you, you may be X, Y, Z, but it's not time. Bring the card. Now, you know, it hits you, but actually it is affront to the ego. Not that it justifies the person's behavior. But I'm just saying that here things happen very differently. Because nothing is excluded. And when school had started, the mother says this very interestingly. She says that, well, because of the Second World War, it left a little package at our doorsteps. And the package was those little sprouts. That's how she described the children. And with the children came parents, and with the parents came teachers. She says, we were not ready for this because the supramental manifestation had not yet taken place. So it is a little premature. But see, it's okay. We were planning to take this up after 30 years. And it has pushed the yoga behind. But now that it has come, we will take it up. Ultimately, it will make the whole thing much more better. So when the difficulty came, a life change of everybody. Imagine with these little children going around playing Ringa Ringa Roses. You know, they used to be very naughty when all those yogis who will close their eyes and, you know, they would go and sometime pull the beard, literally. Stick chewing gum. I'm not joking. You know? They are all old ashramites now. Literally to somebody's beard, chewing gum. Oh, what is this? Somebody walking with eyes closed. Because he doesn't want to see, he may get tempted. So a girl of 15 puts a little tangri leg in the front and it topples. Now if you look at it, you understand what is the deep game going on. You can't fool the divine. You can't close the eyes and say, I am pure. You walk with open eyes and take the challenge. So this is that's why people don't understand ashram. They don't understand Auroville because they are looking for typical signs of spiritual life. Some of them ask, satsang kahan hota hai? Koi ghar nahi hai satsang ka. Meditation kahan hota hai? Koi sikhate hain? Koi pravachan hota hai? Unfortunately, pravachan ke naam par they come here. Pravachan. This is not pravachan. But that's how it happens. Typical places, you go to a spiritual place, these are things you ask. Satsang kahan hota hai? Where is the satsang? Of course, they need bhojan bhandar to eat. But if you tell them there is a nice playground here, you know, Olympic-sized swimming pool, they wonder, what is God that got to do with spiritual life? Why all this adambar paraphernalia? But without a strong physical basis, you'll break down. So, you know, this is built along different lines. Nothing is excluded. So she says that, well, it will exclude nothing. That's precisely the reason we have taken up all human activities. And this activity is not just the departments. Sometimes people have asked this question, is the mother working on human relationship also? I said, yes, very much. It's a big part of human life. Can you exclude it completely? This is not a monastery. Every aspect, how to tune it, and she has given the guidance for everything. It's not like we are left to our own resources. Including those that are considered the least spiritual. So all activities he is qualifying, including those which are considered the least spiritual. For example, eating food. See, even there she says, simple guidance. But I must say it is very difficult to change their nature. But still, we are trying. She is, of course, now 50 years since that. So the disciple says, it is also said that the descent will make the change easier. Mother says, there are two points which resist strongly. All that has to do with politics and all that has to do with money. See how closely they are interconnected. Looks like she is commenting on the recent events. And she explains it beautifully. These are the two points on which it is most difficult to change the human attitude. In principle, we have said that we have nothing to do with politics. No party politics. The ashram does not advocate this party or that party, nor are the disciples meant to go and become spokesperson of parties. Yeah, you have your own preferences, you have your own views which you share, and of course, voting right you exercise. All that is fine. And the reason is because politics is of that nature. And yes, of course, certain tendencies are better, certain tendencies are... But we don't engage in that because its field is so dark. So she says, and it is true that we have nothing to do with politics as it is practiced at present. Times have changed, of course, especially in India. But it is quite obvious that if politics is taken in its true spirit, that is, as the organization of human masses and all the details of government and regulation of the collective life and relations with other collectivities, that is, with other nations, other countries, it must necessarily enter into the supramental transformation. Just can't help you because there's such an important part. For so long as national life and the relations between nations remain what they are, it is quite impossible to live a supramental life on earth. So it will just have to change. We shall have to deal with that too. You see, it's so important because you can't have a supramental life without all these things getting involved. And so the pressure is being put. It's not now, it's last 10, 12 years. The pressure is being put for them to change. So what should be the direction of the change? That also she indicates. As for financial matters, that is, finding a means of exchange and production which is simple. Simple. Well, which should be simple. Simpler than the primitive system of exchange in which people had to give one thing to get another. Something which could, in principle, be worldwide, universal. This is also altogether indispensable for the simplification of life. I'm not going to mention that, one of the things which at least in India we know which made life absolutely simple is the UPI system. And maybe we hope that in the future we'll have something like a universal currency. Not exchange of dollar, which is a different thing because it's diverting the money through a certain... which at one point pound held that position, which now dollar holds. But it is going to go because you see, this is the direction of the supramental life. You can't have that. It has to become very simple. Anybody, anywhere can do it. Transact, maybe directly. And if you observe very closely, something along these lines has begun. Maybe BRICS was an attempt. And that's why suddenly you see it's being hit. Because this will create a different way of looking at it. The situation is, okay, now with human nature, just the very opposite is happening. The situation is such that it has become almost intolerable. This used to be, this was a shocker to me personally, that when I went outside for the first time, Kenya. So I was told you have to exchange your money. I said, why? I thought, rupiya wahan chalega, I'll, no, you cannot. Then I learned it's not just Kenya, everywhere. See, this is a small little thing, but it's so strange. Why the value goes away? Your currency has no value, but another currency chalega. Now you see a very small thing which is happening, creating a big problem. There are currencies which you can use anywhere. Of course, I remember Russia. Russia doesn't accept dollar. Not today. Ten years back. So we're very happy. So yeah, if you want, you have to exchange the dollar entirely, whatever money you have in some. They have only one or two places heavily guarded where you give the dollar, whatever it is. You can't give go to a shop and say, I am giving dollar. You give like in, you can do in many countries, most countries, I suppose, but you can't do that. But you can't do that with Indian rupee. You can't go anywhere and just say, rupee hai, aapko to malum hai na, calculate kar lo. You see, according to your exchange rate, it's fine. No, you can't. See, there is so much falsehood everywhere. Simple things to basically make money. And if you look at it, even card, usage of card, very simple things which, you know, where you make money. So she says that which should have been the much wanted means. She says it's become intolerable. It has become almost impossible to have the least relation with other countries. And that much wanted means of exchange, which should have been a simplification, has become such a complication that we shall soon reach a deadlock. We are very, very close to being unable to do anything, to being tied up in everything. If one wants the smallest thing from another country, one has to follow such complicated and laborious procedures that in the end one will stay in one's own little corner and be satisfied with the potatoes that grow in your garden. She is speaking of yesterday, she is speaking of 50 years back. Without hoping to know anything at all about what is going on and happening elsewhere. It's just not about making money. It's about you. There's an exchange, interchange. You discover, oh, something there is being made. Originally, that's what business is about. It reveals the culture of a people. It's a civilizational exchange. That's what business used to do. Businessmen would travel far and they would carry things. Oh, these things have come, India say. And these things have come from China. These things have come from the West. And there was an understanding mutually of the culture. It was not primarily a means of earning money. So then she says, well, these two points are the most resistant in the human consciousness. This is most subject to the forces of ignorance, inconscience, and I must say quite generally, ill will. This is what refuses all progress and all advance towards the truth. And unfortunately, in every human individual, this is also the point of resistance. So then what to do? She says, well, she speaks of many things here, that, you know, these complications make life so small, they become, you know, that everything becomes more and more difficult, and travel becomes difficult, going and purchasing something becomes difficult, all this she is speaking about. So finally she says, this is the situation. It has grown considerably worse since the last war. She is talking about immediate period after the Second World War. Now we can't say that it is so bad, but during that time we know. There is an idea in the earth atmosphere, an idea which might be called preposterous, but unhappily it is much worse than preposterous, it is catastrophic. Now what is that idea? the idea that if there were a great upheaval, perhaps it would be better afterwards. This is also another thing. You know, Apocalypse and all those movies also came, End of the World. And behind it, that is the impulse that, you know, maybe everything needs to be smashed. It's not a good way, actually, all said and done. Because so much of labor through which humanity has evolved, that also will be lost. So she says, one is so jammed between prohibitions, impossibilities, interdictions, rules, the complications of every second, that one feels stifled and really gets the admirable idea that if everything were demolished, perhaps it would be better afterwards. It is in the air. And all the governments have put themselves in such impossible conditions. They have become so tied up that it seems to them they will have to break everything to be able to move forward. Regarding Pakistan, at one point, the mother said, I saw that recently, mother's original handwriting in French and then the English translation, that Pakistan is destined to disappear. She used the word disappear. And she says it would have happened long back. It's a message somewhere in 71. It would have happened long back. But human imbecility has prevented it. It's meant to disappear. Doesn't matter how, what way. And see, situation, circumstances will be pushed in that direction, whether you like it or you don't like it. So she is reminding us. And she says that this idea of demolishing everything is a very serious threat. And it is not quite certain that life will not be made still more impossible because one feels incapable of emerging from the chaos. This is, you know, when I read this passage, I feel divine is speaking about, you know, the work that I have to do. At least listen. Bhagwan ki vyatha. Sansar ko jo badalna cha rahe hain. It's not as simple as that running an ashram and some people are joining and just to organize their food. It is like the shadow of the new hope which has sprung up in the human consciousness. A hope and a need for something more harmonious. And the need becomes so much more acute as life as it is at present organized. Now she tells us the way. This is the condition of the earth. But for us, one possibility remains. You know, that is the possibility. Now that's the take-home point. What should we do, Mother? How should we engage in it? One possibility remains. I have spoken about it to you several times already. Even if outside things are deteriorating completely and the catastrophe cannot possibly be avoided, supposing there is large-scale things which may be needed, there remains for us. I mean, those for whom the supramental life is not a vain dream. By us, he is saying, those who have faith in what the mother and Shubhinda have said. Those who have faith in its reality and the aspiration to realize it. Who are these people? Those living in the ashram? She clarifies. I don't necessarily mean those who have gathered here in Pondicherry. But those who have as a link between them the knowledge Shubhinda has given and the will to live according to that knowledge. Whoever, wherever. And that's why sometimes I feel that, okay, let me withhold the words for a later date. Yeah, I mean, those who are staying abroad, especially if you ask me very personally, I would say, the coming up, because I know someone very important is listening, the sooner we have a relic center of Sri Aurobindo in United States of America, the better it is. And this is something which I have been saying for the last 2 years. For America and for the world. It's not just about what will happen, what people who will come, not come is not important. I mean, it's okay, it's temporary. It's so important. I feel it's become an urgent necessity. Just the implanting of their presence rooted in the soil. So between the knowledge Shivabindra has given and the will to live according to knowledge, there remains for them the possibility of intensifying their aspiration. As we know, aspiration is the one which melts every obstacle. Intensifying their aspiration, their will, their effort. So instead of being discouraged, disheartened, instead of going discussing all kinds of party politics, intensify the aspiration for the new life, for the change of consciousness, for the manifestation of divine life upon earth within one person and within all. To gather their energies together, see this tapasya, to gather their energies together and shorten the time for the realization. This is our work. There remains for them the possibility of working this miracle individually and to a small extent collectively. That's where the role of collective groups, centers, study circles, important. People often think it's okay, we just come for in the ashram, we have little program, then we go back individually, we are doing sadhana. There is something called as a collective yoga, and which is very much part. There is a reason why centers have been created, and this is the reason that even locally we can have chinna, small little, you know, hubs. So this is the mahajwal. This is, of course, there is no way you can replicate, because it's tapasthali of Shivabindra and the mother. But even if there can be links with this life, and one of the simplest ways is a center dedicated to mother and Shivabindra, and the particularly if there are relics, because, you know, it becomes directly action in the physical. Of conquering space, so a space dedicated to mother and Shivabindra, conquering space. Duration, the time needed for the realization of, so how do we, space, okay, we have a space dedicated to Shivabindra and the mother, and the yoga, by that I mean not just a religious place, they don't want that, but a place which can become a hub by people's faith, their aspiration collectively. So okay, but what about time? So she says very interestingly, and this is a principle one can apply in anything in life. So she says, of replacing time by intensity of effort. Anything we want to do quickly, intensify the concentration. That's time management in one, two words explained. Have more focus, intensify the concentration, you will shorten the time. If the brain is scattered, then time takes longer. So, going fast enough and far enough in the realization to liberate themselves from the consequences of the present condition of the world, so that we don't get dragged into that net of making such a concentration of force, strength, light, truth, that by this very realization they can be above these consequences and secure against them. Whatever may be happening in the world, if one is having this aspiration for light, for truth, for peace, for harmony, for beauty, for the divine to manifest upon earth, one automatically rises above through the inner transformation, and that the storm may pass over the world without being able to destroy this great hope of the near future, that the tempest may not sweep away this beginning of realization. Instead of falling asleep in an easy quietude and letting things happen according to their own rhythm, if one strains to the utmost one's will, ardor, aspiration, and springs up into the light, then one can hold one's head higher. One can have in a higher region of consciousness enough room to live, to breathe, to grow, and develop above the passing cyclone. So this what is her advice given 50, 60, 70 years back, nearly 70 years back, and looks so relevant. And these phases will come till the last, especially in the collective life. And our role here is to become more and more receivers and transmitters of that new consciousness. That's our role. Because the more such little walkie-talkie, divine walkie-talkie, things are there, the better it is, for the world. Okay, Jai Ma.